Welcome to Eric's Perspective. Joining me today is the lovely and talented June Edmonds. June, thank you so much for being here
and
agreeing to spend time with us talking today. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. It's such a pleasure to be here.
Excellent, excellent. So I thought we'd maybe get started by perhaps reminiscing about how you and I first met. I was trying to think back myself, but I'm pretty sure it was during the time I had the gallery in Santa Monica.
Yeah,
it's now in Fulton, by the way, but then it was in Santa Monica. Am I right about that? Do you recall?
It was definitely at the gallery,
In Santa Monica, right?
Yes. I everybody knew about the gallery, and I just remember going to the gallery, and being so impressed with it, and of course, all the art. And it seems to me, that I was probably in the gallery and wanting to meet Eric Hanks in this gallery. And where is he? And I don't want to, look too thirsty, that kind of thing. So I'm sure it happened something like that. Uh-huh. And maybe Michael Massenberg or somebody saw me looking silly and said, June, I'll introduce you. I imagine something like that.
Excellent, excellent. And that goes back, probably 15 or more years ago, would you say?
Yes, at least 15.
And because since then, your work has shown in my gallery. And
yes.
Of course, that gallery in Santa Monica stopped operating in 2015, but resumed, and I'm proud to say it's in Fullerton now and still operating.
Yes, that's great.
But enough about me. We're here to talk about you. So I thought maybe a good starting point would be if you could tell us, it's always interesting to me to hear from different artists how they got started, oftentimes as a child, but not all the time. I was wondering, in your case, when can you identify as that first moment when you wanted to, you kind of felt like you had to pursue the arts?
That's interesting the way you asked the question. You asked, when is the point that you felt like you might want to pursue it? It's one thing to really love art when you were a kid, and I was one of those kids that loved to do art. And I think it was probably in high school, and taking a painting class maybe in the 11th grade or probably the 12th grade, and just having this art teacher that was so artistic, and just kind of saw things very openly and widely and exposed us to different things. And I kind of noticed that I was just loving every moment of it. And this is an art class, and art class is an elective, and your friends take electives to get an easy grade, right?
Oh, sure.
And so you could have all these different attitudes, being in this art class. So my friends had that other attitude. It's like, Mr. Blank Hill, give us an easy grade. And I just sort of kept it to myself, this stuff is really cool though. It's I really took it serious then and was painting, strange paintings and that kind of thing. So I kind of knew.
When you say strange in what way?
I mean, I would have a dream, and I'm like, I gotta paint this blue person, or just the way that I saw Picasso, for instance, and just like, it looks like he just scribbled it. It's like, what the scribble, and so I knew I was just seeing it differently than others and wanted to participate.
Excellent. So how did you follow that up? So you're in high school and you had this one experience with the teacher. So did you sign up for another class after that? How did it work?
The way it worked, at high school, I didn't really have a lot of encouragement, from the teachers, just the way things were set up there. And I felt this was an integrated school, and this particular school wasn't encouraging Black people to go into art, at least Black people that had a Black life, and so But on the other side, my mother didn't really want me to go into art either. So it wasn't like a fight or anything. I was kind of loving art and sort of not telling anybody.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of your own little secret.
It was my own secret.
Yeah.
And I remember I was sitting filling out a college application for San Diego State. You know, I knew I was going to San Diego State. I knew I wanted to go there. And it got to the page where you would fill out the box of the major you wanted to pursue. And I was aiming my pencil to the art box. And my mom, her hand
intercepted it.
It was like a Ouija board. Like my hand was like, oh, what? No, what? You know, so it was kind of back and forth like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, but this is a few years ago, you know, and my mom's options, you know, for going to school was either to be a nurse or a social worker, you know, or a teacher. You know, this is sort of what was sort of passed down, mm-hmm. Around that time for Black women.
Yeah.
And that's what she told me my options were.
Uh-huh.
So I'm sort of a rebellious type, but I'm not going to be like rebellious and fight you. I'm just like, okay, what's my other way around this? I knew I was going to sort of figure it out later. Mm-hmm. So I just sort of circled the sociology box like I was told, you know, mm-hmm. And then went to college, and, you know, you have to take your GEs first. So I took my general ed classes and was like a C student, you know, and then finally I took an art class. Yeah, I took a drawing class. You know, it's an elective, so.
And so this would be like now your junior, perhaps, right?
Before it was my second year, so I was a sophomore.
Okay.
And it was a drawing class, and it wasn't as fun as I thought it would be, to tell you the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I took another art class, and that art class I really liked. But before I took that art class, this is now I'm a junior. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm still the same sociology major, I think. But I went out to Washington, D.C. to visit my aunt. My aunt Lucia lives there. And the National, the Smithsonian is there, the mm-hmm. National Gallery is there, and all of that is free.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I was, you know, 19 years old at the time, and my aunt was at work, and I didn't want to go to work with her every day. So, you know, I spent my days at the Smithsonian. Oh. And it was really my experience with that artwork there that sort of convinced me, you know, that I wanted to go into art. You know, it was really at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So when I came back to San Diego State, you know, I just took classes and didn't tell anybody and started doing really well in school. I just sort of changed as a student. And
even the non-art classes, you improved as a student with those as well?
Well, this is how that went. I was spending like all my time like in the art studios. You know, at this point I was taking, you know, figure drawing and started taking painting and really all my time with that. And I was doing some classes that I was interested in, but some classes that I wasn't interested in, I was trading art for them to write my papers, to be honest with you. And they have that art to this day, and we're still friends.
That's excellent. Okay, we can't tell the people at San Diego State.
But I'm thanking Shauna. Thank you, Shauna.
Well, actually, I'm going to thank you too, Shauna. That was excellent, because we now have you as a wonderful artist. So for her participation and contribution, that's wonderful.
Yes.
We should tell everybody, by the way, you were born and raised in Los Angeles, correct?
Yes, yeah. My parents are from New York. They were both born in New York. My mom, the Bronx, and my dad, Harlem.
Mm-hmm. during his time, perhaps was close anyway to the maybe the end of the Harlem Renaissance, perhaps?
Did he ever talk about that? He was never talked about it because he was born at the very tail end of it, of the Renaissance. That time, right. You know, and so, you know, his parents, though, were in New York in that exciting time. So there are photographs that I just remember looking at of my grandparents and their siblings that, you know, are they're like James Van Der Zee pictures, you know what I mean?
Right.
Where, you know, people would take photos in that way and right. there were photographers in that way, but it was Harlem, so they were dressed a certain way. And
well, from the photos I've seen, I mean, dressed to the nines.
Dressed to the nines. So,
what an exciting time to be in Harlem.
I know, you know. So, you know, those are my grandparents that I have amazing photos of.
So, back to the Smithsonian. So, were there any artists in particular that you saw at the Smithsonian that stood out to you as style or whatever you want?
The answer is yes. And the thing about the Smithsonian, you know, you've got the African Museum, you know, and, you know, I was there a lot of the time. You know, there's the Asian Museum. I forget the name of it. Like, it's not the Frick, but something that starts with an F. You know, so I was really, you know, I had taken art history. I had taken a survey art history class by then. So I had seen reproductions, you know, of a lot of this stuff. But, you know, seeing it in person was just this whole new experience. And to be able to walk up to it and just spend hours and hours, you know, with this. The National Gallery, you know, a whole lot of time. And so they have sort of two parts of the National Gallery, sort of the West Wing, I guess, and the more contemporary wing. So I was there a lot of time. And at the National Gallery, there was an exhibition of post-impressionist work. You know, surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
So it was that post-impressionist show. And I remember when you walk in, there was a Van Gogh, you know. And, you know, my mom would take us to museums, you know, when I was in L.A. And one of those very special times that she took me to the museum, it was sort of like a trip for just her and I, and my brother and sister had moved out of the house. And in college, and it was the two centuries of Black American art at LACMA.
Yeah.
And so that was extremely moving, you know, but it was moving because I was seeing people that looked like people I knew.
Yeah.
Speaking of the Harlem Renaissance, I was seeing people that looked like my grandmother, period. I was seeing experiences, you know, Archibald Motley, of photos that I had seen, you know. You mentioned that, you know, of your musician side, you know.
Yeah. Right.
And my dad, you know, he came up playing the bass, you know. So I had, like, these photos of my dad in these clubs in New York playing the bass. And so saying that to say it's like looking at these paintings from the Harlem Renaissance, are really paintings of my, you know, grandparents' life, you know, and sort of photos that really sort of related to these paintings right here. So there's that, you know, just sort of having this sort of awakening. Because my mom was taking us to museums before. I mean, she took us to the Huntington, right?
Right.
And I might have been 8 at the time. And we're looking at the Blue Boy and just like, I'm looking at my brother and we're just cracking up, you know, like, who is this fool in these clothes? Like, you know, like that was our experience right. back then,
right?
You know, And we understood that this was great talent and all that. I mean, we had that appreciation, but we were 10, you know? and then, you know, to go to the museum and see, you know, these Charles Whites and stuff like that. Yeah. You know, it's like, oh, you know, I had no idea, you know, because art was sort of defined for us in a completely different way, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
So now, fast forward, you know, now sort of being at the Smithsonian and seeing sort of colors used in this way, you know, and being in touch with just sort of the spiritual effect that the color was having and the psychic effect that this color was having.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought, it's like, okay, now that this is something else. And now it probably, the combination of like all those experiences, you know,
came together.
It's like, oh, okay. Because it was really at that point that I went back to San Diego State and I was a different person, you know, as far as going to class and standing out, really. One that sort of opened up the art department and closed up the art department.
Oh, wow. So that was a turning point, major turning point.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
Do you still have family in D.C., by the way? Just out of curiosity.
Yeah, my aunt's there. Oh. You know, you met my aunt, Lucia.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she's there.
Still there?
Yes.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Do you ever get back to the East Coast for a minute?
Yeah, you know, I was there maybe 2 Thanksgivings ago, and I still really love that town.
And have you been to the Smith? Speaking of the Smithsonian, they added the African American.
I have not, you know, because
it's been so
sold
busy,
out right. And all that kind of stuff. But you know, so now all the DC people don't want to go anymore. You know, it's like we're kind of over that. Do it on your own, which is exactly how I'm going to do it.
So now you come back. You've had this turning point, and now your focus is more intense to the art,
mm-hmm.
and you're now you're like a junior, I'm guessing, as I read.
Yes,
the chronology.
I'm a junior now. Mm-hmm.
And so, did you then adopt art as your new major, or did you just continue to pursue it sort of at the same time you were trying to?
Yeah, I changed my major, but like I said, I didn't. You know, unfortunately, I lost my mom as soon as I started San Diego State.
Oh,
and. You know, I was really concerned about my dad. And so I was concerned. I didn't want to ever say anything to my dad to make him upset, you know, because, you know, that's just how I was thinking at the time.
No, I understand.
So I didn't want to tell him I changed my major at the time. I was like, I'm going to tell him eventually, but I'm not going to tell him now. So that was sort of my thinking back then.
So she passed away before you went to school?
She did. Like, you know, in August, the beginning of August, and school started the end of August.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's funny hearing you say I've heard this so often with parents that, you know, they want, as they see it, the best for their kids. And they see art, whether it's music or art or whatever, as a kind of interesting thing, but not something you could actually count on to survive.
Right.
And so a lot of times there's that sort of conflict.
Totally.
Yeah. And I totally understand. As a parent, I understand where they're coming from. But at the same time, it's very difficult if you have these strong impulses
to try to
suppress that.
You know,
so it's a really interesting problem. Dilemma.
Yeah. But you know where it comes from.
Right.
I knew where it came from. I don't know if everybody always knows where it comes from because there's sort of the rebellion that we see when we go to school.
Yeah, exactly.
And that kind of thing. But I always knew where it came from. And it came from a place, or it came from a couple places. You know, one of the places was, you ain't moving back home. So there's that place, you know.
Right. You better be able to take care of yourself. Because
and if you do, I'm going to make it really hard on you, you know.
Right,
you're
right.
Not going to want to move back home.
Right.
You know, so there's that. And then just sort of the genuine concern that they want you to be able to make it in the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
So I get that. And I'm so grateful for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, you know, if... you know, I've always had a full-time job, you know, good or bad. I've always had a full-time job. And I've always been able to pay my rent, and I've never had to ask for anything, and I've never, you know, had to fundraise or anything like that, you know.
So is that why you say you're grateful for it? Because
I'm grateful for that, because I think I'm happier to be able to say that, you know. I mean, I don't know, but I just know I'm super fortunate, because I've never had, I have survived, you know.
Independence, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, by the way, did you ever, at some point, I imagine, you did tell your dad.
I
was just curious. At what point did you tell him you changed your...
I think like 2 weeks before I graduated.
Surprise, surprise.
I think like 2 weeks before I graduated.
So did you change, or did you have a dual major?
I changed my major.
You changed it.
I wasn't fooling anybody with anything else, you know, so... But I graduated with distinction, you know, so I got like special dean's award in art, and then I got a scholarship to Skowhegan as well, full ride to Skowhegan.
Wow. Did you pursue that?
I did. I went to Skowhegan. It was amazing.
Fantastic. So many artists that, a lot of whom were on the East Coast that I'm familiar with, did the same thing with the Skowhegan thing.
Yeah.
And it was very beneficial, they all say. David right. Driscoll, who curated the Two Centuries exhibit you were talking about at LACMA, he went to Skowhegan.
Yeah, all those names did. Any names, you know, that you see, they went there.
But the Skowhegan,
you know, so.
And what was that like, by the way? How did you?
Well, you know, it was really a culture shock, because it's not only... sort of being away and being away from the West Coast, but it's the East Coast, you know?
And it's as almost far north as you can possibly go.
Right. So it's in the middle of nowhere, you know, but it's a residency. It's sort of the first time I've ever had one. And, you know, it was beautiful, just beautiful. You know, it's like by a lake. You know, we had a studio. You know, so it was just amazing.
And your instructors there, were you happy with them?
Yeah, you know, there weren't really instructors per se. There were visiting artists. So you had resident artists and six resident artists, and you had six visiting artists. So that's like 12 artists. So it's a given when you're there that some people you're going to connect with and some people you're not, you know, so
and you were free to do that,
and you're free to do that, and it was up to you to make appointments with certain artists, you know, to come to your studio, and so in our studio there were about five artists, and the resident artists were Donna Dennis and George McNeil and William King and Jake Pertot, and maybe one other artist. And so they came up, and William King was just the nicest person in the world. George McNeil was just like your fun grandfather. You know, he was hilarious. He would just like, let me show you how to do a painting. And then just get this board, and then he'd do this. And then there was this painting. we're like, wow, you know, but laughing, but just really, really enjoying him. And Donna, I don't remember much about Donna. You know, she was nice, but, you know, I don't think we really connected, you know. Mm-hmm. I think our work was just different or whatever. And Jake Pertot was just a beautiful guy, and he invited us into his studio, and, you know, he was just a really, really great guy. So those were the resident artists. The visiting artists were, it was an amazing year for visiting artists. We had Frank Stella, we had Louise Nevelson.
Oh my goodness.
We had David Hockney. It was incredible.
Wow.
And so we had Vito Acconci, you know, who is crazy. And, but the guys loved Vito Acconcha, you know? I mean, he'd take clay and just pound on his clay and, you know, and and that kind of thing. So very testosterone, you know, going on over there.
Right.
But he also showed us how to make our own pigment, and that was really cool. Oh, wow. And Frank Stella, he like showed up in a Maserati or something like that, like in a red Maserati. And
wow.
He was like in and out. And
kind of like a celebrity.
Totally, you know. And where we would have these critiques where it was an area called the Barn. And, you know, he sort of drove up to the barn and just, you know, I think his critique lasted about 45 minutes, you know, only because, like, he just didn't have too much to say about this and this one and this one and this one. You know, I think you're going on the right track. And so just everybody was just in the barn shaking, you know. It's like, oh, my God, what's he going to say about mine?
I can imagine that could be tense, though. You know?
Yes. Yeah, from him, was it like either a yes or a no?
Oh, really? So it was like that. It was pretty much
totally
up or down.
Yes. Yes. But I got a thumbs up from him, so I was happy about that.
That's fantastic.
Just a few of
an
us.
An endorsement.
I got an endorsement.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. If only I had.
From the great.
If only we had, like, Instagram at the time.
Oh, my God. Yeah, you could have definitely capitalized on that for sure.
Totally.
Wow.
And then,
but that's exciting, though, to have those that caliber of artists come in like that.
Yes.
And when you said 45 minutes, so was that just, I'm trying to get a sense, the other artists, did they spend more time than that or less time than that?
I think it was supposed to be about 2 hours,
okay.
Right? And there were 60 of us that were up there.
Wow, so he spent, on average, less than a minute.
30 seconds. That's 30 seconds per student.
Yes, no, no, yes, yes. That's pretty amazing.
But Dave Hockney, he was the opposite.
Oh, really?
And he was spending about 30 minutes on everybody, just the sweetest person in the world.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, just couldn't get around to everybody.
So did he get around to you, by the way?
No, you know, and at that time, what I was painting, I was like totally inspired by him. I had like 2 postcards, you know, in my studio, mm-hmm. you know, on my little board. And one was David Hockney and one was Varnette Honeywood.
Oh,
you know,
goodness.
So they were the ones for me.
Yeah.
You know, I had some more, but they were like the main ones because it was sort of about painting Black life and then David Hockney, sort of like these interiors and sort of this California life. So, so that was, you know, you can look at those early paintings and see that, you know.
Your early paintings.
Mm-hmm, you would see both of them.
You know what? I have to tell you, I have not seen your early paintings.
Well,
I would like to.
Yeah.
I'm curious
I'm going to send you something.
Please.
Okay.
I'm going to hold you to that.
I'm going
to
do it.
And I've got all these witnesses who are listening. I'm serious. I am curious, though. I'm curious to see.
Yeah. You'll see it.
It's always interesting to me, the journey every artist takes to find their own voice.
Absolutely.
And almost, I don't care what kind of art you're involved in, it's always, almost always anyway, the same kind of steps.
Right.
There's these artists you admire and
big
kind
turns
of,
yeah. And all that. It's why I love seeing myself.
So Varnette and David Hockney.
Yeah. So I was feeling a kind of way, you know, when all that was over and he only talked to 3 people.
I'm disappointed. I was real
disappointed, but you know, but I was young and dumb too. You know,
okay.
So that means I had, you know, a little chutzpah. Yeah. So he was giving a slideshow that night, you know. So I said, I'm going to go back there. I'm going to sneak back there. I'm going to talk to him. And so I did. So I went back there. I said, hi, David Hockney. I'm like, I'm such a fan of yours. I'm such a fan. And I was so sad that you didn't see my artwork or something like that. And he was like, oh, well, where do you live? Do you live in New York? I live in New York. Do you live in New York? I swear, that's what he said.
Oh, my goodness. So he was willing to accept you in at his place in New York.
Mm-hmm. I said, no, I don't live in New York. I live in L.A. And he says, well, me too.
Well, wait, he lived in New York and in LA. He's bi-coastal.
Right. But you know he lives in England, too.
So. Right. He's all over the place.
I think there's a number of cities I could, I might have been able to say, and he would have sent me to. So I was able to, at a point when I was in LA, I was able to show him my work.
In LA, at his place.
And he loved it.
Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. Can you remember something specifically he mentioned?
I can.
Do you mind sharing it with?
I know he wanted to show it to his gallerist.
Oh wow. That's a big deal.
It was a big deal, but it never happened, unfortunately. Okay. Yeah.
But did he have any specific things about the work itself, did he say?
I really don't remember. I just know that he looked at it and I could tell he really liked it, but I wasn't surprised because I was kind of his student.
So it was like it was almost like for him maybe looking at a mirror or something almost.
Maybe. I mean, I'm not the draftsman he is because he's an amazing draftsman,
mm-hmm.
but. As far as the color and sort of the setups and that kind of thing, yeah.
So is that what, would you say that's what the, just back to what you drew from him in terms of his art itself?
Yes, him and Barnett. Yes.
That is what you took from it, the color and the,
mm-hmm.
I see.
And sort of the sort of spirit of the interior and just sort of this LA, thing at the time. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. Wow. Interesting. So how long were you at Skowhegan?
It's a 8-week program. 6 weeks, maybe 6 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now the big question is, so you come back and I just know from looking at your resume, you ended up at, was it Philadelphia?
So I was already accepted to Tyler. So I just came back for a few weeks and then went out to Tyler.
How did that happen? I mean, you're a West Coast artist.
You're right. My teachers were from the East Coast. You know, my two favorite teachers at San Diego State, they went to RISD, to Rhode Island. And so they knew the East Coast, and my family was from the East Coast, and, sort of I knew about the museums there and sort of an attitude that I even had about it. So I wanted to go to the East Coast for graduate school, and my teachers encouraged that.
And how did you choose Tyler over some of the other schools you
went to?
And by the way, I think we should quickly say RISD is the Rhode Island School of Design, a very prestigious school.
Right.
Just let everybody know.
So I just was really wanting to go to the best school. To be honest, and so there were three schools that were taking sort of the 1, 2, and 3 spot, and they were Yale at the time and Chicago Art Institute and Tyler. And Tyler was number 3, Chicago number 2, Yale number 1. I applied to all three of them and was accepted to Tyler. And so I went to Tyler, and that's the only reason I went there.
I see.
And so, in retrospect, I would never have done it that way again.
No? Why do you say that?
Because, just what I tell young people now is to look at the faculty and see who you want to work under.
I see. And so, looking back on it, you had arranged Yale, you said, I forgot, the Chicago Art Institute.
Right.
And then Tyler.
Right. And I didn't know who was teaching there. I didn't know.
So that's anybody. What you would have done differently. You would have actually found out at those schools who was where.
Right.
Looking back on it, how would you have changed it then? Was there any particular instructor at any one of those institutions? Or is there another institution that wasn't even on your list that you would have gone to?
I would have cast a sort of a broader net in my investigation, maybe instead of just like the top three, because you sort of narrow down your applications because of the application fee, right?
Of course, it gets expensive.
It gets expensive. Yeah. And so, So doing the research, like maybe the top 10 schools, the top 20 schools, and doing the research of who's there, you know, and seeing who I connect to and who might connect to me and what I'm doing by seeing what they're doing. You know, like I was saying, like with Barnett, you know, who I connected with immediately, you know, it's, I connected to them because I, you know what I'm saying? So, so it's like this huge chance that they're going to connect with you because you're just like geeking out over them, you know?
And that's true. There's no guarantee that it'll be reciprocated.
It's no guarantee. Right. It's no guarantee. You're right.
Right.
You know, but I still would have done it differently in that way.
Oh, okay. Do you happen to know now of any instructor at a different school you would have gone to? Looking back?
No, not looking back, because I don't know who was where at the time.
Now, here's an interesting, I was just wondering, did you spend any time with Barnett? You were bringing up a few times, and she's here now, was anyway, she's passed away now, but she was in L.A. Did you ever have an opportunity to spend any time with her?
Well, she was a mentor, you know, and I talked to her quite a few times. I saw her quite a few times, but I wouldn't say that I spent real quality time with her.
Okay. So then would you look back on your Tyler experience and say, oh my goodness, what a waste of time? Or did you really, is there anything you can take from that?
Never. Yeah. No, not at all. Nothing is a waste of time.
Oh, okay. So
not at all.
You got something out of the experience at Tyler.
Oh, totally.
And what would you say the most outstanding thing you took from that experience at Tyler?
Well, it was really hard, you know. It was hard.
They pushed you, in other words, would you say?
It was hard because I didn't feel like I had a support for exactly what I was doing. Like what I was doing sort of figurative work, you know. And so much of the faculty was doing abstraction, all right?
Ah, so there was a conflict. That was one conflict.
Right.
What I was curious about is people of color, you know, it would be kind of, I would wonder whether that would be a factor.
Totally.
You're a female of color.
Totally.
And a lot of these instructors were probably Caucasian men.
Right. So totally.
Was that an issue, you think?
I think absolutely. You know, so, and it's still an issue to this day, you know, it's still an issue to this day,
yeah.
You know, but, like the faculty member that they wanted me to connect with who was painting figurative, you know, he didn't have any color in his color palette, you know, and I was doing the opposite, you know, I was looking at, you know, Robert Colescott, you know, was when I was in undergrad, you know, and so he, you know, this is the palette I was taking to grad school. And so at the time, you know, I wasn't getting support for that. So, you know, so it was
tough.
It was tough, but it also sort of prepares you in a way. So it's like, okay.
You mean prepare you for the real world?
It prepares you for the real world completely, you know? So, you know, I left not taking anything for granted. You know, I left with no, you know, jumping board whatsoever. You know, I will walk back into LA, you know, with no letters and no, you know, so, you know, that's how it was. So it was, you know, just this black person's experience was completely different than the people that I graduated with.
Right.
Completely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you were doing figurative then, but now, and a little while back, you were not doing figurative stuff.
Right.
So what was the turning point? What changed you? What switched you from doing figurative to more abstraction?
Well, you know, it was just, it just kind of started as an inclination, you know. I just wanted to do it, you know. I just had an idea I wanted to do, you know. I wanted to do some art that didn't have figuration and didn't have color, you know. So what happened was, like, this is in the late 90s, so mid to late 90s. I had just finished doing the MTA. I'd gotten MTA public art commission in Long Beach. So that
and
would...
And is that the same one? Now, I just happened to see you mentioned Michael Massenburg. And by the way, he was one of the earlier podcast guests and so forth. So it's kind of nice to have that connectivity. But I noticed that he had an MTA thing.
Yes.
And so did a bunch of other artists like Charles Dixon and so forth. And there was a catalog made. And there you are in the catalog.
Yes.
Is that the one you're talking about?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. So this was, I applied for that in 1989.
Okay.
And was awarded that in 1990. Uh-huh. So when I had received that, I was the second Black woman to get that as a commission. So I'm really proud of that. The first Black woman was Sandra Rowe. Oh. So,
congratulations.
Yeah. So that was like a 5-year process. So it started in 1990 and it was installed in 1995. And so, you know, that was figurative. And a couple years later, I got a couple of residencies. One residency was at Dorlin, which is in Temecula, California. It's a small one.
Okay, I'm not familiar with that one.
Yeah, you know, it's small. It's super rustic, and there's no electricity there. And
I would say super rustic. My goodness.
It's just
hopefully
rustic.
Running water though.
It's got running warm water. But that's about it, really? You know. But it's a really, really wonderful place.
Excellent. How long were you there?
For a month.
Okay.
And then I did another residency. This is, you know, just a month later or 2 months later. That was in New Mexico at the Helene Wurlitzer Foundation. Oh. And
is that Santa Fe?
That's in Taos, New Mexico.
Taos.
And that was for 3 months. So that was really amazing. But the first one was at Dorlin, and I was like, okay, what am I going to do there? And I was like, you know, I have always thought about, you know, exploring abstraction, and this would be sort of a good time, you know, because I'll have time away where I could really focus on, you know, abstraction. So that's what I did.
Oh, excellent. So yeah. That's the turning point. You go to Dorlin, you got this opportunity.
Yes.
And, you know, you decided to explore abstraction. So, but abstraction, it's really funny. It's so many different directions you can go in abstraction, right? I mean, how did you, you know, what was the first, let's say, step you took in that direction? Like, you know, there's geometric abstraction, abstract expressionism. There's all these different ways of expressing the abstraction or designing it or however you want to talk about it.
Yeah,
I was just wondering, how did you make, you know, what was the sort of the first step in that direction, would you say? Can you trace it?
Well, you know, it was drawing. You know, I was doing a lot of works on paper, you know, primarily works on paper with charcoal, like different kinds of charcoal. So I was interested in sort of the expression, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So they were very energy driven and expressionistic and, you know, organic, if you will, sort of line quality.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And so from there, I'm just thinking now of what I've seen over the last several years.
Yeah.
And that's a little different in my mind anyway, the way you design using the circles and so forth.
Yeah.
Mandalas and all that. Can you talk about that? How did you get in that direction? Because that seems to have kind of struck a chord with you.
Yeah. You know, well, they came really sort of directly out of sort of a meditation, if you will. You know, I was just meditating one day and something said, oh, just go on and paint this, you know. And so that's when I started just doing those circles, you know. Yeah. And that's I showed circles, you know, those they at were, your gallery.
Oh, my God. And they were so attractive.
Thank you.
And a lot of folks were gravitating to them. You can't look at them without being drawn to them, I think.
There's thanks.
And it's not just the design. It's also, for me at least anyway, the feeling of them.
Thanks. I was really trying, you know.
That was what you were trying to accomplish.
Yeah. Yeah.
Excellent. And you're still exploring that. Am I right?
Or? Yeah. Yeah. You know, sort of the vocabulary of imagery is expanding, you know, but yes.
So is there, let me ask you this, is there a spirituality that informs that particular type of work? I mean, your own spirituality?
Yes.
If you don't mind talking about that.
Yeah, most definitely. And it's nothing, like there's nothing like super unusual about it. You know, I think many people meditate. I think that sort of the symbol of the circle is sort of universal in its spiritual connection, if you will. Mm-hmm. You know, and it definitely connects to the Adinkra written, you know, symbolism. Mm-hmm. From West Africa in a way where sort of that circle means most high, you know. Mm. So a lot of times that's given to the king, or it's reflective of sort of a spiritual definition as well. Excellent. So I do connect to sort of the universality of that.
Oh, fantastic. Mm-hmm. That sort of helps connect everything up, you know, to understand that style of painting. It's really interesting. So are you still, you know, sort of in that vein, would you say?
Yeah, you know, but like I said, I'm sort of extending the vocabulary of symbols, if you will. Also they always are sort of connected to the physical world as far as creating some kind of space, if you will. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm interested in that. I'm not sort of this flat plane painter, you know, so it's connected in that way, you know, to the spiritual world. I am interested in how the works read, you know, spatially. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, I'm always playing around with that and sort of different ways to communicate different rhythms, because they are also connected to music, you know.
Well, you know, I was glad you brought that up, because I noticed even the quote in the MTA catalog, you use a lot of language that musicians use, you know, sort of rhythm, syncopation, and so forth like that.
Yeah.
So when you work, by the way, do you listen to music, or is it just more, you know, it flows through you kind of a thing? You don't have to listen to it for it to be an impact.
Right, right. So it does flow more. I mean, I do some, but not necessarily. I kind of listen to like podcasts and books on tape as well, when I'm doing work. Uh-huh. But the language, you know, of music and visual art overlap. You know, it's just the arts just overlap in that way, dance and all of that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's just super rich. It's lends for a rich experience, you know, when you can interact with all the arts and sort of see the relationship and like maybe listen to music and see color or connect to drama in a certain way. Mm-hmm. And want to capture that in your painting and that kind of thing. So
it's interesting you say that, because I there was an artist, he's passed away. His name is William McNeil, and he was an abstract painter. And he told me that, you know, he was a fan of John Coltrane and Miles Davis. And oftentimes he would play that music and interpret it on the canvas.
Yes.
It was like he was allowing, it was channeling the music from the speakers through him and onto the surface of the canvas.
Absolutely.
I thought it was kind of fascinating. Yes. As I understand it too, Kandinsky did a very similar thing.
So many artists do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To me, and that's just another proof of what you're saying about the interconnectivity.
Yeah,
The arts. Yeah. Try looking at a movie, for instance, without music in it.
Right. Wilson. August Wilson is inspired by Romare Bearden.
Absolutely.
You know.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Wynton Marsalis, the same thing. He put Bearden's work on many of the CD covers.
I see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's really, I just find it fascinating. One other thing I just thought of and I wanted to ask you about, I noticed, and congratulations on getting this award from AWARE.
Yeah.
And it sounded like from the article that I read, you were the first winner of this award. It was an inaugural award.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about AWARE? And I know it's an acronym. I just can't remember what it stands for. I'm not sure if you do or not.
I'm not going to, you know.
But it's a women's organization.
It's a women's organization out of France, you know. And it was taking place at the Armory, and the Armory is the show that happens. It's a fair that happens once a year in New York. Okay.
Okay.
And it's a pretty big one. It's a pretty amazing one.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was with my gallery, Luis de Jesus, who I have been with for only a year and a half. So I was honored that they took me, and wanted to just dedicate the booth, to my artwork. So so what AWARE stands for, they're an amazing organization out of France, out of Paris, that have existed for at least a decade, but it is to sort of raise awareness of great women artists, so you can go to their website. I'm an educator, and there's so much to learn about women artists that you've never heard of, so it's like,
wow, that's available on their website.
That's available on your website. It's like when I went to school, and I was, opened up my history book, there's no women in there. There's no black people in it,
Right. That's a sad commentary.
It's a sad commentary. And I imagine it's gotten better,
Yeah.
But still there's a need for these organizations. And so that was their intention for coming together. Okay. And so at the Armory, what they had noticed about it is that there were very few booths that were dedicated to women artists. Okay, so that was another thing.
I see.
And so I think they said the year before there were more than there were this year,
mm-hmm.
And this year, there were very few. And so their intention is to sort of award the gallery, and the artists for sort of standing out in that way.
So the gallery also got an award?
Well,
or is it just the fact that
it's the fact, so just sort of
it spotlighted them.
Right. Got sort it. Of the acknowledgement that, we see what you're doing.
Well, my hat's off to them too.
Right.
That's really awesome. Are they here in LA?
They're here in LA.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. They're great.
That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Let's say it one more time. The name of the gallery that you
Luis de Jesus, Los Angeles. They're on La Cienega.
Excellent, excellent. And then also, I wanted to bring out that AWARE. You said the website. Do you think it's aware.org or something like that?
Probably.
Okay.
Yeah, that'll be easy to find.
Yeah, folks.
Yes.
AWARE.
Mm-hmm.
It's an acronym, but if you look it up, you'll be able to find it.
Right. Yeah.
Excellent. That's fantastic. So, what are you working on now? What can we look forward to moving forward past this point?
Yeah, so I'm in a group show right now at Luis de Jesus.
Okay. And how long is that until?
That's going to be up until the beginning of the year.
Okay, folks, check it out. Her work is at the Luis de Jesus Gallery in Los Angeles.
Yes. So I have a piece there that's a little bit different. I got a grant, a COLA grant, about 3 years ago. And one of the pieces I did was sort of inspired by the stream, and very different than what I had been doing before. And it was a flag, you know, an American flag. So I was sort of working with primary colors and skin tones at the time. So I thought, and the way I sort of dreamed this flag was that it was all black, but the colors I was working with for this body of work for this municipal art gallery show were primary colors and browns, you know, and mm-hmm. just sort of the relationship to primary colors and browns, you know, mm-hmm. When referred to in vernacular, you know, it's like, I know that when we were kids, we were people that were light skinned, we call them yellow, we call people red, but you know what? So we were used to sort of these primary colors and didn't even know it, right?
Right. So and I recall that myself.
I know you recall it. and so I said, okay, instead of red, white, and blue, I'll use red, yellow, and blue on this flag. Oh. And so so that got, you know, when I put that up, you know, people really liked it, and that's how I got connected with Luis, and I had an exhibition with these flags. And so, you know, I'm still doing some of those, but I have sort of this other flag as well that I did for this show, and it's totally different colors. It's like white and pastel colors and really sweet looking, you know. And the title of that is called Silence, right?
Oh, okay.
And if you look real closely, you see that it's a Confederate flag. So,
mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
No, I'm definitely curious. I gotta check this out. I want to see this.
Yeah, I'll send that to you.
Please do. Well, I actually want to see the show. I don't know, but that's the other thing I wanted to ask you about, though, given the current situation with COVID-19, it's affected so many galleries.
It did.
And the whole way all galleries are doing what they do is a little differently. Have you felt that impact, too?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's really no walk-ins. You know, people are by appointment only.
Right. Well, I would love to see that piece in person. I'm going to see if I can. You say the show is up until
like January 1st.
January
1st. Okay. Yeah.
So I'm going to do my best to get over there. Anything else going on? Do you have any more commission works you're working on or anything like that?
Not commissions, you know. I am working towards a solo show that's next spring. So I'm working towards that.
Okay.
Yeah.
At the Jesus Gallery?
Yeah, Luis de Jesus Gallery.
Fantastic. And
I have a residency next year I'm looking forward to. That's in Vermont. You know?
Oh my goodness. Congratulations, Vermont. What part of you'll be back in New England?
I know, the first time.
Since Skowhegan probably,
since
right?
Skowhegan. Yes.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
How long will that be for?
Just for a month.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Yeah. Of course we are all rooting for your success.
And, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and I want to thank you for being a guest on this podcast. Thanks for sharing your perspective.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Really appreciate your time. And I'm sure everybody out there listening would benefit greatly from hearing your
I hope
your
so.
Thoughts. Yeah, I'm pretty sure they will.
Thank you.
And so with that, thank you all for tuning in to Eric's Perspective. Please don't forget to subscribe. Thank you.